There's nothing quite as comforting as gathering around with mom friends and sharing stories. Stories have a way of making us feel better, and they're great reminders that no family is perfect, and that's okay. So join us as we share some stories and laugh, learn, and grow together. It's the iMom Podcast. Welcome to this week's episode of the iMom Podcast. Once again, it's Chloe and Susan and Megan and Abby. We should make some thing out of our name.
Not chasm. Mask.
M-A-S-C. Scam. Mask.
Scam.
Oh, no.
Scam.
This is not a scam.
This is real motherhood. No scams. So this week's episode is about self-control and how to teach self-control at any age. And so I put the question out to the three other ladies around me, said, all right, who's got a great self-control story? And I think Megan and Chloe are both like, we need it. I can't really teach anything on it because I don't have it. And I think that's true for a lot of us. I think a lot of us struggle with self-control. It's just part of being human. But that doesn't mean we cannot still try to teach it to our children because it's just so important. So the story that came to mind for me was, and I don't know if this was self-control or just peer pressure, positive peer pressure, but when I was little, when we lived up north, my grandparents lived down the block, and Christmas morning, we had to go to church before we got to open presents down there. So we did get to open presents at my house, but we would go down the block, and we'd go to church, and then go to my grandparents' house, and it would be, my dad was one of six, and so it would be like, you know, four of his brothers who lived in town and their kids and me and my sister, my parents, my grandparents, and they would make breakfast before we got to open presents.
Oh, man.
So not only, I know, torture, right? Not only will we have to go to church.
Lunch already.
But then it was probably like close to like 10 o'clock by the time we were allowed to open presents. And the kids, we would all just sit staring at the presents and like finding whose names were on which ones and stuff. And like I said, I don't know if it was just positive peer pressure because none of us ever opened any presents. Nobody ever like ripped into them or anything.
Wow.
And I look back on that and I'm like, how did we do that? You know, I don't think I could do it today if I, you know, I don't think I could wait 3 hours in the morning before I open presents. So that was definitely a good exercise in self-control.
Yeah.
But it's something that I think a lot of parents struggle to figure out how to teach their kids. But whatever, however you define it, self-control is about being able to regulate yourself, whether it's as an adult saying no to the cookies or
TikTok.
Yeah. Or as kids being able to keep your hands to yourself. So Megan, a few months ago, you sent me a link to an article. I think it was a CNBC article. About, and the headline said, I raised two successful CEOs and a doctor, and here's the number one skill I wish more parents taught their kids today. And I was like, well, that's clickbait. Thank you very much. And yes, I will. It was written by Esther Wojcicki. You've probably heard of her, even if you don't know her name. She has three daughters. One of them is the co-founder of 23andMe. Oh. One of them, well, until last month, was the CEO of YouTube. She just resigned, just stepped down last month. And the other one's a doctor. And this is what she said. Developing skills like curiosity, kindness, and emotional intelligence at a young age will help kids succeed as adults. But there's one skill that parents aren't teaching their kids enough of today, self-regulation. Because when kids learn to self-regulate, which is another word for self-control, they better understand the importance of time and how to manage their own behaviors and actions. So I just think it is huge to understand time, to understand your behavior, how your actions affect other people. That's like a building block for life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it is emphasized very much today among parents or within families. So what are some initial thoughts? What do you guys struggle with teaching your kids self-control? How do you feel about it?
Oh, man. Well, I have a 8-month-old and a 3.5-year-old. So we're teaching very basic self-control of like keeping your hands to yourself and, you know, no, you can't have candy because we haven't had dinner and we're not going to have candy willy-nilly. So, I mean, we're at the very beginning stages of teaching self-control. I don't have a whole lot from a parenting perspective yet. So I'll let someone else take that. I think from an adult perspective, I mean, I think I've learned by trial and error.
It's hard for us to teach it because it's hard for us to do it.
Yeah. Oh, and everything is so instant now. Like, gosh, oh, I need one of those. Let me go on Amazon. You get it. Instead of thinking, oh, I'd have to go to the store and get it, which makes you think twice, and then you'll end up not getting it.
I'm willing to pay more just so I can have it tomorrow for no good reason, even if I'm not even in a rush. I just want it tomorrow because I want it tomorrow.
So we are doing, my husband and I are doing the micro resolutions, like a different quote resolution every month, and we're doing a different fast every month. So January was sweets, February was dining out, and March is technology screens after dinner. So I'll tell you what, the dining out one was tough. Yeah. And of course we like,
what are we going to eat tonight? Chips.
Yeah. I mean, and there were some loopholes because we were out of town for a week and we're like, well, we have to dine out. Yeah. We're out of town. But I mean, really it took a lot of self-control to say, well, no, we are going to make food at home tonight. Or all of these little fasts are definitely teaching us some self-control. Last night he wasn't home and it was no screens for me after dinner. I'm like, what am I going to do?
Churn some butter.
Yeah. That's how it felt. I was like, well, I guess I'll either go for a walk or I'll read. And I don't know. I just, it is a challenge for sure. And I think we have to keep doing that as we grow up. But the link between, for children, the link between low self-control is and low academic success is very high. Obviously, that makes sense. But also there are links between low self-control and anxiety, depression, aggressive behavior, obesity, and drug abuse. So you just have to give kids these opportunities to practice it because there is no boredom anymore. There is no waiting anymore. Mm-hmm. There's always a place our kids can go to occupy themselves instead of having to control themselves. And so I think that moms just have to double down on our efforts.
I will say, I don't know if this applies. It kind of does, but when we adopted our kids, they were older. And with one of them, I was just struggling to get him to obey and do things. And she kind of walked me through this. Maybe I've talked about this before, but this process that children go through in learning how to obey, which is this self-control. And she said, we're born as a child and a toddler, and we see it, we want it, and we take it. You just grab whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then what happens if you have a good parent is you see it, you want it, you take it, but there's a consequence. No, you can't have that candy right now. It's taken away from you, or, you know, whatever the consequence is. And then we go to the next step. I see it, I want it, I don't take it because I don't want the consequence. I know what's going to happen. And you just don't want that consequence. You're learning self-control at that point. No, don't want that to happen. The next step is I see it, I want it, I don't take it because I want to please that person I love, which again is another motivation for self-control. Oh, I care about that person. I don't want to disappoint them.
It's
intrinsic.
It's outside of you. Oh,
exactly.
Oh, yeah.
And then they said the next stage, and by this time you're talking about an older child, is I see it, I want it, I don't take it because I've come to believe that it's wrong. In other words, that third cookie or, you know, watching that TV station or whatever. And then the last one is I see it, I want it, I don't take it because I know that it's against God's principles. So then you've gone to a higher system of belief, even beyond your own belief. They said at that point, then you're kind of, you know, ready to come out from underneath your parents because you're going to make decisions based on things you believe or the God you believe in.
Yeah. I think that with self-control, one of the struggles is that it looks so different. There are so many different examples of it that it's hard for us to keep coming back to it with our kids because it's such a vast
it's every day,
it's everywhere,
part of every facet of their life.
So I think that saying self-control and labeling it as self-control might help our kids focus on improving it, like by saying, you know, you use your inside voice, that's self-control. Don't interrupt, you have to show self-control. Or ask before taking, that self-control. When you continually remind them of that, it will help them come back to like, okay, self-control. I have to do it. And maybe that's not something for Megan, like for a 3-year-old yet, but once they get to be 5, 6, 7, just labeling it as self-control will help them actually do it, I think.
Mm. Isn't self-control one of the months?
Yeah, and no, I mean, we've talked about, you know, A, keeping your hands to yourself, that's self-control, because he kind of went through a little hitting phase and he didn't understand that like hitting hurt people. So I kind of showed him like hitting hurts. I kind of whacked him a little bit. And it wasn't too hard. So he's fine. Don't anyone worry. He's perfectly fine. But he was like, ow. And I was like, see, you don't like it when you get hit. So I kind of had to show him like you have to have self-control because it's hurting other people. And so the other day he came home from school and he was like, I didn't take so-and-so's toy. I had self-control. And I was like, see, didn't that make you feel good? Like, and that probably made that person feel really good too, because you didn't take something away from them that they were playing with. So he's kind of like, I think slowly starting to understand that there's another person involved and not just what he wants.
Yeah. Yeah. And yes, we do. So the new calendar that we have with the building character traits, October is self-control, but we have a lot of good self-control printables. There's conversation starters. There's a contract about self-control. So a lot of different opportunities to
teach.
What
I like about the calendar, it's kind of like, what do you call it? Your micro resolutions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because every month they can get little stickers if they exercise that character quality, like self-control.
I think some kids are more naturally inclined to have self-control, though. For me, I enjoy delayed gratification, so it's not as hard for me sometimes to not take that thing that I want right then, because I'm thinking, oh, well, I'd rather wait for it and let that anticipation build up. Do you think that, Susan, with 5 kids, did you see that some of them, it was easier to teach self-control?
Absolutely. Some kids are more impulsive, and they just have a hard time not acting before they think about it.
Yeah. Well, and some kids with ADHD, they say, you know, you have to do games with them. You have to do things that can help them practice and grow that muscle, you know, treat it as if it's a muscle. And actually, I did a little research on this and I thought it was some really fun ideas. Simon Says is a good game to teach impulse control.
Mother May I?
But red light, green light.
Yeah.
And what they suggest you do. So if you've never played red light, green light, everyone's lined up and you say green light and they run. When you say red light, they stop. And the first person to make it to you is the winner, but they have to follow the rules, right? So what you do, though, to really help drive home the idea of self-control is then switch the cue. So when you say red light, they run. And when you say green light, they stop, because it then tests the child's ability to go against a habit. Mm. So they're having to really like control that impulse in a different level. Like you kind of take it up a notch. And I thought that was kind of a fun, fun little trick. Yeah. So let's talk about the different ages. So because self-control should look different for a toddler, a middle schooler, you know, an elementary kid and a teenager. So when you're talking about teaching self-control to a toddler, it's going to be, you know, you call it the self-control muscle, Megan, kind of just like what you're doing, right? You talk about it, you teach, you give examples, you show them, and it's staying in bed. You know, if you have them stay in bed, when they want to get out of bed, they have to occupy themselves, and that leads to self-control.
One other example, we actually got into it the other day about seatbelts, because he got to the phase where he like didn't want to wear a seatbelt. And so I'd explain to him like why we wear seatbelts. We all wear seatbelts. I showed him my seatbelt. And actually his school did a really good job of this, because they take little field trips and they ride this bus that actually has seatbelts. And I don't know what they told them about wearing a seatbelt, but it totally worked, because now even when we fly, he'll wait. He will not take off his seatbelt unless that little light over goes off. And I'm like, you can take off your seatbelt. And he's like, no, the light hasn't gone off. And I'm like, what did they tell you at school to get you to wear the seatbelt? That you're terrified.
Yeah. Well, in elementary school, self-control can be learned by sports and having daily tasks, like taking the dog for a walk or other activities that require self-discipline, because there's just this really common link between self-discipline and self-control. Giving kids time to take a break, because downtime will allow them to recharge, which will then give them the ability to show self-control. and reminding kids of the rules. You know, if your kid's in elementary school, reminding him of the rules will help him learn self-control.
I think, too, developing structure to your day early. Like, our kids knew when they came home from school, the first thing we did is snack, then homework.
Mm. Yeah.
You don't go out to play. You don't go play sports. You know, you get the work done first. And it's hard because they do want to, especially the boys, they do not want to jump into that homework.
Right.
But if they get used to it, then they don't think about it. And it's just part of their, just makes the habit easier.
Yeah. One tip I heard for teenagers and teaching self-control to teens, because when you're a teen, not having self-control has much more dangerous consequences, is to help them work on planning in everyday life. So just fun stuff. Let them work. Let them help plan things because it trains the brain to think ahead.
Yeah.
And just doing that on a regular basis will naturally make their brain think forward instead of in the immediate.
I think, too, for teens, it's really getting that concept of delayed gratification, because if you don't get your homeworks and everything done during the week, then you lose your weekend, your fun time. If you don't study hard now, you're not going to do well on the SATs. It kind of builds to these bigger things that if they don't understand the delayed gratification of, oh, I want to go to college, so I have to work in high school, then it really sets them behind.
Yeah. One thing that my parents did with us that I don't think they were in, I think it came across more of as a respect thing, but it taught self-control. My mom asked us to come when we were called. So if she shouted for us across the house, we weren't allowed to say yeah or what. We had to actually come to the room that she was standing in. So when you ask your kids to do that, when that is the arrangement between you and your kids, they have to actually stop what they're doing, which is then flexing that self-control muscle. So that's like a inadvertent way to teach self-control. Chloe, do you think that as a kid, that was something that you were okay with? Like, is the way that you've described yourself as being emotional and a little bit of a wild child, do you think that your mom would describe you as having self-control as a kid?
I don't know. It's hard because I think I was more impulsive as a kid, but I also really did respect my parents. So I think, I don't know. It's hard to say. I had some self-control in some things. Like
you played sports in college.
I think soccer really taught me a lot about self-control, and like I still see the benefits of that in my life. I think the thing I struggled with was like, and I still struggle with this, is like self-control over my words, you know, things that I, in social situations.
Right.
But I think as far as like goals and things I want in life, I'm not afraid of delayed gratification. I don't know. I think it just kind of depends on the situation.
I mean, what you said just reminded me of how important team sports and group activities are.
Yeah.
Because kids just naturally learn self-control when they are part of like socializing like that.
Yeah.
You know, whether even if it's with words, oh, I can't mouth off to a teammate because I get in trouble from the coach, or my teammate doesn't want to talk to me anymore. Whereas there's just different things that happen with inside the house, like with inside your home. The things that you might get away with saying to your brother are different than what you would get away with saying to your classmate.
Yeah.
So there's so much that kids learn just through living life.
Yes.
It doesn't have to be a lesson, quote lesson, you know?
I don't know if this is a relevant story or not, but there was a kid on the swim team with Megan, and we're talking about a kid who was 6 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So I'm not talking about a little kid. And one day I caught him. He struggled emotionally. You know, he was kind of a Eeyore kind, you know, just mad or grumpy sometimes. And one time I saw him, he had this Band-Aid on his arm. Not Band-Aid, a rubber band on his arm, if I told the story. Mm-hmm. And he popped himself. And I asked him, I said, what are you doing? And he said, my grandfather told me to wear this. And every time I say something that hurts somebody's feelings or is wrong, I'm to pop myself and remind myself I'm hurting people.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just kind of a great little tool of, you know, self-control. He didn't have it with his words, and it was, you know, damaging his relationships.
And he was training himself.
He was training himself.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, Susan, I want to talk for a second about the marshmallow test. Can you explain the marshmallow test?
Yeah, I love this test. It was done by Stanford University way back, I think in like the 60s, because they followed everyone they did the test on into adulthood and proven that, yes, kids who have self-control are more successful later in life. And the test was this. They took 4-year-olds and they would bring them one by one in a room where they're on a little table was a paper plate and a marshmallow. And they would explain to the child, I'm going to step out for a few minutes, and this marshmallow is for you. You can have it whenever you want. You can have it now or later. But if you haven't eaten it, when I come back, I'm going to give you two. So you can have eat the marshmallow now. It's yours. Or you can wait until I come back. I'm going to bring you another one if you haven't eaten this one. And they filmed the kids. And it is hilarious. Google it. Watch it. Because you can kind of anticipate what your child would do. And they even had twins. And the parents got to watch in another room. And the parents of the twins even are just, you know, laughing because one just pops it in his mouth and the other waits. And so there is a certain amount of this that is inborn. So one little girl literally does everything with that marshmallow, but eats it. It goes in her mouth. She licks it. She holds it. She does not eat it. And one girl literally turns her back on the marshmallow so she won't eat it.
I love that.
And then, of course, there's the kids who don't even wait 10 seconds for the guy to be out of the room.
Sure. Sure. So that test, basically what you just said, it's some kids might just be born with more self-control. And they found that the kids that exhibited more self-control showed greater success later in life. So if you're a parent and you're like, well, if my kid's not born with it, then are we just done? But this test was revisited. And what they found was that a child who lives with parents who reliably promises to deliver small treats is going to have a reason to wait for the marshmallow. So basically what they did, and they wanted to see if a parent who follows through with what they say they're going to do will create a child with more self-control. And they said across the board,
yes,
it was true.
Mom. It can be taught.
Yes. And so if you do with your kids what you say you're going to do, then that they're more likely to be able to wait. And what the line that they said that really struck me was, for a child accustomed to stolen possessions and broken promises, the only guaranteed treats are the ones you've already swallowed.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So to teach your kids self-control, one way to do it is to follow through with what you say you're going to do. They also found, they took it a step further, researchers wondered, well, maybe kids don't have to wait for an adult to let them down personally, to lose faith and then to give up on long-term rewards. Maybe it's enough to catch the adult lying to someone else. So they did another test following up. And with all of these experiments, they ended up doing the marshmallow test at the end of it. And they found that children who had observed the adult behaving dishonestly were more inclined to delay gratification. So if they saw the adult lying to somebody else, they still didn't believe that they were going to be good to them. Mm-hmm. And so they were less likely to show self-control.
Gets back to, I see it, I want it, I take it. Mm-hmm. Or yeah. I see it, I want it, I take it. I'm not going to take it.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a consequence.
Yep. So I kind of want to close this episode about self-control talking about, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, Susan, because I think you're the best to speak on this. Self-control being a fruit of the spirit, because when I think about the fruits of the spirit, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, I think if the Holy Spirit is alive within me and growing within me, these kindness is naturally going to come out. Self-control is one that feels a little bit like, well, how is that a fruit of the spirit? Why is that a fruit of the spirit? Why does it feel different than some of the other ones?
I think, like Megan said, James learned that there's another person involved. Self-control, I think, is something that's harder to learn because you have to. Well, kindness is too, though. But self-control is putting the other person ahead of yourself. Mm. And so it's thinking, I'm not going to do this because.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's last.
Yeah, or, I mean, if it's self-control, just like for me with like not eating junk food, like it's just recognizing like the consequences of your actions too that could hurt yourself, not only someone else, but yourself in the process.
I think also if you look at the whole Bible, you know, God with the Israelites for the first, you know, in the Old Testament, talking them over and over about obedience. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to give you the promised land. I have this for you. You have to wait. You have to obey me to get it. And they just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that's where we realize we can't do it without the Lord.
Right.
And then, you know, the New Testament, he gives us the indwelling of the Holy Spirit. We still have the self-control.
Yeah.
It's not a free-for-all. And it's just so integral to our testimony and who we are.
Yeah.
That was a long answer.
No, that's great. That's so good.
Well, I think it's important to remember that it's something that God wants for us, you know, mm-hmm. and wants for our children. And so it's something that we can pray for. You know, God, show us how to teach this and help this grow within me, so that just like this marshmallow test proved, if I can control myself, if I can be honest, if I can follow through with the things I tell my children, they are more likely to then do the same things.
Well, and if we think back to the fall, isn't every sin a lack of self-control? Yeah. Yep. Cain killed Abel. I mean, everything.
Yes. The apple.
Yeah. Exactly. Everything started kind of with that lack of self-control. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And pride, you know, and I think that self-control and pride are linked as well. You know, you think that you are beyond having to wait or beyond having to ask, or I'm important enough that I can have this thing right now.
And pride is kind of the root. That is that heart feeling. But self-control is the head that can stop that heart feeling. And so it is kind of probably that biggest muscle we have to flex.
Yeah. All right. So tell us how you flex your self-control muscle and how you're helping your kids grow that self-control muscle via the link in the show notes. We've got a lot of good self-control printables, including that calendar that we were talking about.
And love.
Yeah, we'll put that link in the show notes as well. And thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the iMom podcast. iMom is the motherhood program of the nonprofit organization Family First. Along with our fatherhood program, All Pro Dad, we exist to help you love your family well. Subscribe to our daily email, the iMom Minute, by going to imom.com/subscribe and get tons of great ideas, insight, and inspiration. The iMom podcast is hosted by me, Abby Watts, along with Susan Merrill, Megan Tigner, and Chloe Blumenthal.